So let's kneel together for a moment in a word of prayer to invite God's presence amongst us. Our dear, kind and loving Father who art in heaven, we bow in your sacred presence this evening to thank you that you brought us safely to this spot to share the truth which are so much present truth for this time. We're glad, dear Lord, that you're making ready a people through whom you will finish the work and cut us short in righteousness, that very soon our Saviour may appear in the clouds of heaven. We all go home to be with him in the home made new. We recognise that you are the source of light and truth, that we are the dependent receivers and Jesus Christ is the great connector. And so we open your word tonight and during the coming days of this week, we do pray that your blessing will be richly upon us. The fellowships will be very, very close and very precious. We shall all go away from this place strengthened to serve you and to do your will and to be the means whereby others shall come to see the light of truth as well. And so we thank you for these blessings because we ask them all at this time in Jesus' precious name and for his sake. Amen. Now, as I said, there's several folk yet to come because of various problems beyond their particular control. So I thought tonight we'd spend a few minutes on a news report of what's been happening so far during the camp meeting sequence or circuit for this year. As you'll appreciate, of course, there is a camp meeting circuit which begins in Africa as a rule, goes to Portugal, then to Germany, Norway, England. Now, we had our first camp in England this year. And then across to Quebec, Canada, then to California, to Walla Walla, where I've been over the past several days. And now, of course, we're here in the Western Canadian camp meeting for this year. It's quite a few years since we had a camp in Canada, isn't it? I've forgotten how many now, but mostly the Canadian folk have come down to either Walla Walla or Puyallup or even to California in the past. I left Australia at the end of June and went first of all to Zimbabwe. And Zimbabwe, of course, being the new name for Rhodesia, which has changed names over the past several years since they have now gained majority rule and, of course, the black people now run the country. And from there, I travelled down to Botswana, where there was a very, very interesting new contact and, in fact, the first white man in Africa to accept the message. The situation has been that in Africa we have only black believers. Just as in North America for quite a few years, we only had white believers. But in the last few years, we now have quite a few black folk, especially in Washington, D.C., who have embraced the message very heartily. And for this reason, of course, there'll be a camp meeting in Washington, D.C. for the rapidly growing group of believers out in that part of the country. It'll come in about 3 to 4 weeks' time. This particular white man, whose name is Brian Hyde, is actually an Englishman. And he plans to come back to England, I think, at the end of this year, which I'm sorry to hear. I'd rather he stayed in Africa and kept the light of truth going there amongst the white people. He was a member of the Seventh-day Adventist Reformed Church for quite a number of years, but became increasingly disturbed and distressed by the lack of spirituality that he found in that rather legalistic organisation. So much so that he complained one day to one of the brethren in Johannesburg, a man named Brother Madisha, who is a black man, a Zulu. And Brother Madisha promptly gave him bondage to freedom, acceptable confession, justified by faith, one or two other items to read. We took them home and, of course, being naturally prejudiced against reading anything new by the Reformed Church's attitude, he tossed them onto a shelf and left them there for about 3 months. At the end of that time, he said, well, I better read these things. And he picked up one and read Bondage to Freedom. And when he read it, he said, well, that's exactly what I need. And he was able to translate this into a personal experience. So when I came to Botswana, he was very eager to meet with me and to spend, I got there, I think, Wednesday morning, about 6 o'clock. It was bitterly cold, too. Because as you appreciate, of course, this is the winter time in the Southern Hemisphere, and South Africa, of course, is in the Southern Hemisphere, while you, of course, are moving away from summer at the present moment and will enter into your winter in a few months' time. So I spent Wednesday, Thursday, Friday and Sabbath with them, and there was quite a nice group of black people also sprung up during the year, and we had a wonderful fellowship there in Botswana during those 4 or 5 days together. And in the end, Brian Hyde was able to recognise the fact that the Reformed Church was not the Church of God and was glad to embrace this message very heartily and fully. I haven't heard from him since, but I'm quite confident he's doing quite well in the message now. I went into Johannesburg and I spent about 3 or 4 days there before flying up to Portugal. And the Portuguese group is the only group in Latin America. We have no one in Italy, no one in Spain, and no one in France. And Portugal, therefore, has a distinction of being the only Latin American people. Now, I shouldn't quite say that because I remember that there is a Spanish brother who comes from Colombia. Colombia in South America, of course, is a totally Spanish-speaking area, as is also, of course, Peru and Argentina and Venezuela. The only country in South America that doesn't speak Spanish, of course, is Brazil, which speaks Portuguese. And I think there's an enormous number of people over there who are possible candidates for the message. So we had a very, very fine week in Portugal. It was good fellowship, good spiritual response to the message, and I really enjoyed that week with those folk in that part of the country. Now, I then went to Germany, where we have our biggest European camp, and this year there were representatives from about 9 different nations present. I still can remember them all. There was a man from Poland for the first time, and Poland, of course, is a very Roman Catholic country, and for a man to embrace the message from that country is quite something. And he came along for the first time and really, really enjoyed the week, the best we'd ever spent in his life, he told us. There were several folk from Czechoslovakia, and a Romanian brother didn't quite make it. I believe he crossed the border just a little bit too late to get to the camp meeting, but there would have been a Romanian there if he could have done so. There were Austrians, there were Swiss, there were Dutch people, there were East and West Germans, there were English folk, there was a Spaniard from Colombia in South America, and there was an American, a German-American, a young man that now lives in Loma Linda who speaks, of course, good English as well as German, and he was present, and of course there was an Australian too, naturally. So we had quite a range of different nationalities, and German was the common language. Everybody present understood German, which saved us double translations from English to German or anything else along the line. Before I got to Germany, I knew, of course, that I would be picking up the study of Revelation with them, because last year I studied Revelation chapter 1 and 2 and the first 4 or 5 verses of chapter 3. That involved the entire camp meeting. And I, naturally enough, made a kind of an assessment of what I thought we would cover in the week we spend at the German camp. I thought, well, we should at least finish chapter 3 and take in chapter 4 and 5 and 6 and 7 and possibly chapter 8, maybe even chapter 9. With my amazement, when we began to study the Philadelphian church and its experiences, so much light opened up on that particular scripture. We spent the entire camp meeting without any padding at all studying 2 verses in Revelation chapter 3. And I was quite amazed at the truth we learned from that chapter, in that particular camp meeting. I might say that when I left Australia, I had no idea at all what we'd take up at this camp meeting, or in the Californian camp, or the Arkansas camp, or any of the other camps. And I began to regret just a little bit that last year I had carried Revelation on from camp to camp and got through it all. I said, well, if I hadn't done that, I would have had material for the next 2 or 3 years. Now perhaps I've exhausted my potential. But I believe in the Sabbath rest principles, and of course, as you know, God's commission to Jeremiah was he would preach what God gave him to preach and go where God sent him to preach it. And that's my commission too. And so I never spent not even 2 minutes digging up something to present. I said, well, if God doesn't give me a message again this year, I'll tell the folk I've nothing to say and go home again. But I trusted the Lord to give us precious light, and that took faith, because I said we've now got the character of God, we've got the 7 angels, we've got the Sabbath rest message, we've got true miracle mystery. Well, what else can there be? I thought to myself, what else can there be? But when I got to the German camp meeting and saw the light that God has for us in the Philadelphian church message, I realized then that there's a lot more that God has for us yet, which we haven't even begun to see. And I knew then, when that camp was over, that I'd have enough material to conduct all the camps in America, even sequentially again if need be. And I've never seen a European camp that was so blessed, so unified, and believer after believer told me it was a very, very blessed camp meeting, a especially blessed camp meeting, said Brother Kurler, who came across from East Germany. And he said with such conviction and such earnestness, I knew he meant every word he said. And I was also amazed to find how the believers at that camp meeting really got the point, or a number of points, that the camp meeting brought forward. In fact, I just asked them casually, what was the main point that you got from this camp meeting? And I was amazed at how they could read back to me the very points I had been so anxious to stress during those 7 or 8 days spent together. Well, that German camp meeting began 4 camp meetings in a row without a break. I finished it on Saturday night, and next morning we were up early and hastily packed our bags and then took a car and drove all the way across the western side of Germany through Belgium into France, took the hovercraft from Calais to Dover, and began the camp that night, Sunday night, for another week straight through, with 5 studies every day at the English camp meeting. Now, the English camp meeting was especially planned to meet the needs of some new interests which had developed in England. But to add dismay, when it came down to the wire, not one of those new interests came. But not to be discouraged, we continued the camp anyway, and we're very glad to have, I think, 8 or 9 German, English-speaking German folk come across from the continent who were very, very anxious to take in the second camp meeting. It's amazing how when people have the opportunity, one camp is not sufficient. They'll follow from camp to camp. In fact, there are 2 young people, Teresa and Todd Taylor, who live in Brockton, New York, which is upstate New York, almost on Lake Erie. And they have already been to the camp in Quebec and the camp in California, and they yet plan to go to the camp in Arkansas, and they may even go to the camp in Washington, D.C. So they must be really interested to take in 4 camps if they can make 4 camps. They certainly will take in 3, and it's possible they may even go to the 4th one. On top of all that, they expect me to go up to their place and hold more meetings before I leave the country. So if you're talking about keen students, I've certainly got some. So now, I had planned to have a full week break between the English camp and the Californian camp, which is rather good to recover my exhausted energies and so forth, but there sprang up in Quebec province this year, which is part of your Canada, of course, a fine group of French Canadians, most of whom speak only French. They can't speak hardly a word of English. And so there's very little communication on the conversation level between me and them during the week. And I did suggest to them that their camp could be in October, but they said to me, no, it would be too cold then. And believe me, I can believe that after being there 2 weeks ago and waking up one morning to a withering frost, there was at least 1/4 inch of ice in the car. You just go like this, and off comes all the ice off the roof of the car. And that was 2 weeks ago. So that's what it was like in late August, what would it be like in October. So I'm glad that so what happened was we had to wedge this camp in between the English and the Californian camps, which gave me the 3rd camp without a break. I boarded the plane from London Airport at 10 minutes past 12 English time and arrived in Montreal at 10 minutes past 2 Montreal time, which was 5 hours difference, of course. So as far as my body was concerned, it was 10 minutes past 7 in the evening. Well, Floyd Taylor and Brother Picard picked me up at the Montreal airport with the plan to drive me back to the campsite to have the first meeting at 7:30, which was up halfway to between midnight and 1 o'clock, as far as I was concerned. But there was a big traffic jam on the freeway because of some repairs being done, and his car overheated, and we had to leave the freeway, and then he went to his mother's place. When all these things were done, we finally got to the campsite. It was after 9 o'clock their time, which was 2 o'clock in the morning my time. You've heard of jet lag, haven't you? Have you ever suffered it? Because it is something, believe me. Well, those French Canadians were so anxious to get started that they'd all sat up patiently waiting until I arrived. And we greeted each other and got introduced all around. And then they all trooped into the meeting room and sat down with expectant faces. And I got the message. They want to study right now. So I said, oh, well, I thought to myself, we'll have a little 10 or 15 minute devotional and we'll all go to bed. But that wasn't their idea, not for a moment. And so we ended up having a full 45 minute study period that particular night, and I finally got to bed my time at 3:30 in the morning. I've been on my feet since 5 o'clock in the morning English time, so that made a total of about 19, about 22 hours on my feet altogether. But, you know, the Lord really sustained me. I never felt the slightest effect of that. And at 3:30 in the morning, I was just as wide awake as I am now, and I am wide awake at the moment. So we had a very, very fine week with the folk in Quebec, with 6 studies every day, 1 before breakfast and 5 thereafter. And the believers there are really, really enthusiastic. And now they consider that this represents a tremendous victory for the message in Quebec, because Quebec is a very, very strongly Roman Catholic province, as you probably know. When you drive through the countryside there, you often see little shrines and crucifixes and so forth beside the road, just as you see in Europe itself. And the Adventist churches had great difficulty in Quebec in putting together church companies. But they have been successful in Quebec City putting together three churches there. And when Laval Picard and his wife embraced this message, and he was a minister in the Seventh Adventist Church at that time. I'll go back a little bit, and about 9 or 10 years ago, he had learnt the English language, but because he went to a college in Alberta or Saskatchewan, not sure which province it was. Where's the Adventist College in the West? Do you know? Alberta. That's probably where it was, yeah. And there he learnt the English language, and now he speaks, of course, French and English. Now, as I said, he joined the Adventist Church by reading Desire of Ages, and I can't think of a better way to join the Adventist Church than that. He was not introduced to it by studying a long list of doctrines and theologies, but by the life of Jesus Christ. Now, his first enthusiasm in Adventism was followed by a sense of frustration as he found that his own personal experience did not match the descriptions of Christian experience which are given in the book Desire of Ages. And he went through a very, very real Romans 7 experience, a very hard and bitter battle there for quite a number of years. And then last November, Brother Brown from Utah mailed him some copies of our books. I think he'd asked for some Wagner and Jones's books, and Brother Brown slipped in one or two of our books as well, Bondage to Freedom and Acceptable Confession and so forth. And he read these and he said, ah, he said, this is the very message I find in Desire of Ages. And through the practical explanations given in those books, he did gain a personal new birth experience for himself and for his wife, and his wife did too. Well, he then said to himself, I must introduce this to the people in my three churches. And he began very carefully to spell these things out to them, with the result that practically every person in those three churches, 100 people altogether, embraced the message, every one of them. One man was very opposed at first, but he took the message in quite strongly later. Now, of course, when I heard this, I knew they'd come in shaking, because when these church people felt the pressure of the ministers and leaders, they would naturally back off. Many of them would give it up again, which proved to be true. And in the end, I think about 20 to 25 people finally, with children finally, today are standing for it, and standing for it very strongly. Anyway, the Laval went to his superior minister, because he was an intern at this time. He wasn't yet a full minister. And introduced the message to him, and the pastor called the message just, what do you call it? He called it rubbish, garbage. He called it garbage, nonsense, and heresy. And pretty soon he was called up before the conference officials in Montreal to answer for his faith. And he said to his wife, before the meeting took place, he said, I have a very strong conviction that these men are going to use strategy and deception to counter our work. And sure enough, they did. They said to him, now, we'd like you to stand up and give a presentation of what you believe. And he did. So he stood up and gave a presentation of what he believed, emphasizing the eradication of the old nature and the implantation of the new. And the secretary of the union said to him very enthusiastically, Brother Picard, how delightful. We're thrilled to know that at last you found righteousness by faith. Well, Brother Picard said, that's good then. Then I can go and preach this. Oh, no, they said, you can't go and preach it. And he said to them, well, he said, this is righteousness by faith. Why am I called into question for preaching what I preach? And they tried to assure him that all the ministers of the conference preached this, and that he was making a big deal out of nothing. And he said, no, he said, I know they don't preach it. And in the end, they disfellowshipped him from they fired him from the ministry and disfellowshipped him from the church. And in the end, as I said before, about 20 to 25 people left the church together with him, and now they form a very active and enthusiastic group of French-speaking people out there in Quebec province. And they're quite excited about what they consider to be a very marvellous victory for this message in that kind of context and environment. Now, Brother Picard is very busy now translating our books into French, and we hope that this will mean that the message will then penetrate the various other French-speaking areas in the world, Haiti and the Martinique and the African countries where French is spoken, and back into the mother country itself, that is France in Europe. We'll see, of course, as time goes by, what will develop in this respect. So the camp ended on Saturday night, as all the others did, and 5:30 in the morning I was up. That's 5:30 in the morning I was up and took a plane from Quebec to Montreal, then down to Chicago and across to Salt Lake City, and finally down to Reno, where Alan St. Clair picked me up in his little aeroplane, which I have which I'm using at the moment to fly around the country to meet all these appointments. And we started that camp that night. So there was the fourth camp begun now in 4 weeks. And there was a time years ago when I couldn't do that. I hadn't yet learned the power of communion with God, how to claim the promise found in Isaiah chapter 40, that they who wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength, they shall mount up with wings as eagles, they shall walk and not be weary, they shall run and not be faint. And when I would take a camp meeting, I would last till about Monday or Tuesday, my voice would virtually cut out. I'd have to struggle for the rest of the week. Some of you folk who have been in the message for years will remember those days, perhaps no one here will. But I learned how to go to God and draw strength from Him to keep up with the tremendous drain in my energies, and now I can go through 4 camps in a row and my voice is just as good at the end as it was at the beginning, if not better. And I really had no break during the past week either, because after the California camp I've been giving studies for several hours a day down in Walla Walla, and here I am ready to begin now this camp in British Columbia. Now the camp in California this year was rated by all those present as being the most blessed, the most inspirational, the most helpful, the most inspiring they've ever experienced in their lives. And the message was, the message contained in the message to the Philadelphian church, which will begin tomorrow morning in earnest and carry this same camp here over the same ground as we stayed down there in California, and you'll be blessed just as much as they were. Now we had some new faces present. One of the most interesting was a man who came all the way from New Jersey, clear across the country, to attend the camp in California. And with him came his granddaughter, a girl of about 20 to 21 years of age. Now this man was a sailor for many, many years, and he developed a great capacity for reading, because he said back in those days when he was a sailor, about the only entertainment on board ship was to read a book. There was no television, no movies and so forth, so they read in all their spare time. And he became a Seventh-day Adventist, and that's quite a story too. I've forgotten all the details. Now he did tell it, but I'd rather he tell it than I did. A number of years ago, and but like a number of other Seventh-day Adventists, he became distressed and disturbed by the lack of real spiritual food in the Seventh-day Adventist church, and he became kind of involved with a small group of independent thinkers out there in New Jersey who were looking for something a little better. And one of them was a very active chiropractic doctor, and one day someone sent this doctor a copy of Behold Your God. And the doctor said to our brother, whose name is Bob Geddings, he said, look, he said, read this for me, will you please, and tell me what it's all about. So he began to read it rather skeptically, he said, and he kind of kept expecting to find the thing go off on a tangent and then end up in extremism. But he said the more he read, the more he liked it, the more his prejudice was disarmed. And so he completed the book, and he read it all the way through the second time, still looking for trouble but found none, and then learned to really love the truth in regard to God's character. This led him to send to our depots in America, and he got every book we published up to date and read every one of them through. And then when he'd read them through, he got the messenger, learned about the California and Arkansas and Washington DC camp meetings. And even though the Washington DC camp meeting is only 100 miles down the road, or maybe a bit more than that, he couldn't wait till that time. He had to come to California to take in the camp meeting there. And he loved it. He really did, and so did his granddaughter as well. The second family who came to California for the camp meeting, a second new family, is the Harrington family from Boise. And this is extremely interesting, and more than just interesting, they're quite an entertaining family in a way. The mother has the ambition to have 12 children. She already has 10, so she's almost made it. Brave soul. She's going to call them her 12 apostles when they finally all arrive. And the children have an extremely high IQ. They've got brilliant young minds, and I've been amazed at the ability on their part to reason and to think and to think logically and to understand the message. And they just sat there, those children, all the way from about 3 years of age up to about 14 years of age. And the eldest boy there is the second eldest in the family. The eldest girl was not present. And when that camp was over, he could repeat back to me virtually everything I'd said. It was incredible how he really hadn't missed a single point, and they seemed to be able to apply what they heard immediately. And so we found them a very interesting and stimulating family to have amongst us this particular year. Those are the main new folk who were present, and of course we had all the regular people present as well. But this year, it's evident that the camp in Arkansas is going to be a very, very big one. I just don't believe we're going to fit all the folk in the meeting room out there. We probably have to put speakers outside and have some folks sit outside and listen without being able to go inside and hear it all, because there's several new families from New York State. There's four folk coming down from Quebec, and there's new families from Chattanooga. And quite a number of folk are going out from California to the camp in Arkansas, so I expect it to be a very, very big camp indeed. Now, I didn't particularly plan to go to Walla Walla this year because I hoped that the folk from there would come here or go to California. But when I got to California and found that some folk were missing who, because of certain problems, couldn't make it, and I know now why they couldn't make it, they needed some personal work done for them, I felt a very, very strong directive to go to Walla Walla, and I'm extremely glad I did, because I was able to do some very, very fine personal work amongst folk there who live there. One family's coming up next weekend to visit with you people here and being taking the last weekend of the camp meeting, and would come the whole time, but for work commitments that they can't get relief from. And so I've been in Walla Walla now since Monday night. Monday afternoon I flew the little plane up from Challenge, California, and landed at Walla Walla Airport. And spent that night and all day Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and this morning with the folk in Walla Walla. And was very pleased to even see one or two new faces turn up for the meetings there as well this year. And then this morning I came across from Walla Walla to here. And here we are, all set to start this camp meeting now in British Columbia. So that gives you some idea of what I've been through in the last 2 months, to almost 2.5 months now. And I must say it has been the most encouraging, the most spiritual, the most successful, the most blessed, and the most enlightening visit I've ever made any time in the past 20 years around the world. I'd like to say, too, in great appreciation to the believers all over the world, well, I must be about one of the most fortunate messengers that God has ever put to work, because when I think of the time that the Adventist Church gave Sister White, how badly they treated him, and how badly the other reformers of the past were treated by their contemporaries, even by their own followers, I must say that I find nothing but appreciation of the message and love for myself and the message, and the fellowship around the world has been really wonderful, absolutely wonderful, and I'm very, very grateful for it. So I must say that I have a very fine classroom or bunch of students everywhere I go, and I'm grateful for it. So then, I think we'll close it at that point for tonight, and then tomorrow morning we'll really get down to business properly at 10 o'clock in the morning and dig right into Revelation chapter 3, the message on the Philadelphian church. And I think you'll find it'll be a very, very blessed and inspirational in-depth study we'll enjoy together during the coming days of this week. I'm sorry we can't sing a closing hymn, or can we, without the music? What? A solo? Either that or we can all sing some.
Do any of you know the little chorus, Rejoice in the Lord Always? Yes, you know it.
Okay, I don't.
Rejoice in the Lord always, and again I say rejoice. Rejoice in the Lord always, and again I say rejoice.
Let's kneel in prayer, shall we? To close. Our dear loving Father in heaven, we thank you for the manifest working of your Spirit in our hearts and lives around the world. We thank you that every evidence points to the fact that very soon the closing events of this world's history shall begin. Very soon the last battle shall be fought, and very soon our Saviour shall return. And as we ask for these blessings tonight, we just thank you for them in Jesus' precious name and for his sake. Amen.